Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And tonight we're going to examine the abduction, the anatomy of abduction, actually. And we're going to have a very interesting guest lined up. But before we get to that, I want to welcome a couple of new affiliates that may be joining us on a regular basis. KYOS in Merced, California, and KJAA in Globe, Arizona. We welcome you, and for the audience, if you like the program, give the stations a call and let them know that you liked it. And welcome aboard. And before we get started with the abduction thing tonight, I've got some interesting news from the mysterious San Luis Valley. Now, before we get into that, the mysterious San Luis Valley is a place here in Colorado that has experienced a complete range of the UFO phenomena over the last couple of years. And we've had Christopher O'Brien on the program before to detail what's been going on down there. And it's my understanding now that recently Linda Moulton Howe, Tom Adams, and David Perkins, Gary Massey, and of course Chris O'Brien recently met with regional sheriffs in Alamosa, Colorado on November the 14th to discuss the upsurge in unusual cattle deaths in the Colorado-New Mexico area. We have not heard, we're going to get a report from Chris to find out exactly what the meeting entailed, but it's my understanding that there has been an increased amount of activity in that area, and including a cattle mutilation right there in the San Luis Valley. Now, New Mexico has been experiencing a huge amount of reports lately, and there's also been four that I know of in the southern Colorado area, about 65, 75 miles south of the Denver area, which is where this program originates from. So we'll keep you up to date on that, and you know, let you know what is taking place down there. But apparently, from what O'Brien is telling us, there is an upsurge in activity. Okay, now, excuse me, got to watch out here for the microphone stand. My guest tonight is someone that has a national, international name and following in the abduction research area. He wrote a book called Secret Life, and in this book, we're going to touch upon all these different aspects of the abduction phenomena. But in David Jacobs' words, the more I learned about these abduction stories, the more I felt that I was peeking into a hidden world. If these stories had any resemblance of reality to them, many people had been leading secret lives, unbeknownst even to them. They were being abducted and subjected to strange procedures. As a result, humans were being employed to produce another form of life, a secret life. And all this was being carried out by an alien form of life that existed secretly in our environment. My guest tonight is, excuse me here, I got to get my papers. My guest tonight is an associate professor of history at Temple University, specializing in 20th century American history and culture. He is the former director of the American Studies Program. Dr. Jacobs has been a UFO researcher for 27 years. In 1973, he completed his doctoral dissertation in field of intellectual history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the controversy over unidentified flying objects in America. This was only the second PhD degree granted involving a UFO-related theme. A revised version of his dissertation was published by Indiana University Press as The UFO Controversy in America in 1975. It is the only non-debunking UFO book ever published by an academic press. Now, I can tell you personally that I use that book as a reference book. It's a very, very well-detailed book. 1991, Dr. Jacobs and colleague Bud Hopkins were co-recipients of a grant to discern the magnitude of the abduction phenomena. The results of that survey using the paper, the Roper Poll, sorry, organization, were published in 1992 in the widely disseminated and highly influential booklet, Unusual Personal Experiences. Dr. Jacobs' second book, Secret Life, The First-Hand Accounts of UFO Abductions, was published by Simon & Schuster in 1992. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Jacobs. Good evening.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the program. Okay, let's start out by talking about we're going to talk about the book and the different aspects of your research. Start off by telling us how you got involved, because I think it's a very interesting story, how someone of your background and caliber, a scholastic background, got involved and interested in UFOs.
Well, actually, I got interested in the subject quite early on when I was an undergraduate at UCLA in the mid-60s, and I began to read it like other people would read science fiction or mysteries or just fantasy stuff, just to kind of break the tension from reading history all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the more I read it, the more I realized that there might be a signal in the noise, that there might be actually something to it. And by 1968 and 69, I was heavily into it. And at that point, I determined that I simply was going to read absolutely every single thing that I possibly could read and see if I could gain some sort of expertise in the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1970, I was so totally immersed in it that I decided eventually to write my doctoral dissertation on the subject itself, of the controversy. And that came out in 73, and ever since then, I've just sort of stuck with it as I realized that it's not very often that a person gets the opportunity to contribute something to an area of such enormous importance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just decided to stay with it, although sometimes I'm not so sure whether that was the best decision or not, but I'm totally connected to it, though.
Now, have you ever seen a UFO yourself, Dr.
James? No, not really, no.
Okay. But you're basically convinced, and of course, like I said before, the book that you produced and published in 1975, I think, is a excellent reference tool for anyone in the field or anyone who has a curiosity about the history or the background of the phenomena. Now, how did you get involved in the abduction phenomena?
Well, in the late 70s and 1980-81, most people in the UFO research community have believed that the abduction phenomenon was an extremely controversial, exotic kind of esoteric area of the UFO phenomenon, and with a strong possibility that it could still be psychological in origin in some way. And there hadn't been a whole lot of research done on it. Of course, we knew about Barney and Betty, and we knew about Pascagoula and Travis Walton and a few of the other cases. But
okay, let me interrupt you there. We're going to have to go to a break. But when we get back, we'll discuss this and get into the anatomy of the abduction phenomena and talk about your research. 1-800-836-2009. That's a toll-free number, 1-800-836-2009. My guest is David Jacobs. He is the author of Secret Life. We're talking about the abduction phenomena. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Picture this. You're drawing a bath, but before you get in, add industrial strength cleaner to the water. Now add some weed killer and some fertilizer. Oh, and you know the motor oil you drain from your car? Pour that in too. The idea of getting in water like this is unthinkable. Yet that's what our oceans, lakes, and rivers are becoming. Bodies of water dangerously contaminated. Not just by industry, but by you and me as well. But here's how we can all help. Use less toxic household cleaners and practice natural lawn care by composting and using fewer chemicals. And instead of pouring used motor oil onto the ground or into storm drains, simply take it to a gas station to be recycled. That way we can help our waters to be clean once again. And won't that be a welcome relief? Ah, clean water. If we all do a little, we can do a lot. To find out more, call 1-800-504-8484. That's 504-8484. Brought to you by the Natural Resources Defense Council and the EPA.
Listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And tonight we're talking about the anatomy of abductions. The abduction phenomena is one of the more mysterious aspects of the UFO phenomena. And my guest is David Jacobs, Dr. David Jacobs, who has published a book called Secret Life. He is an expert in the field of abductions as well as UFO research. David has a comprehensive background that goes back many, many years, and someone who I personally respect quite a bit for the work that he's done. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, Mike.
Now, let's talk about the different types of experiences that you have essentially over the years that you've been doing this abduction research. What has the data shown to you?
Well, I've done between 550 and 600 regressions on about 110 different individuals, and the data shows me that people have that this is a very structured phenomenon, that it's predictable to a large extent, that it truly is reproductively oriented, and that people have a series of physical, mental, and reproductive procedures administered to them when they are abducted.
Now, when you say reproductively oriented, is that to imply that the sole motivation is for genetic reasons or hybridization, as they call it?
Well, I don't know if it's the sole motivation, but it certainly is the main one that we see. Every single person who I have ever dealt with talks about sperm being taken or eggs being taken. Women talk about fetal implantations and fetal extractions, and they talk about having to interact with odd-looking babies and children, and then even adults who appear to be sort of half human and half alien. And we think, of course, that this is the reason for the abduction phenomenon, and ultimately, in my opinion, this is the reason for the UFO phenomenon in general.
So now that's an interesting statement. I mean, years ago, you know, the history of the UFO phenomenon, the modern history, as everybody calls it, these kinds of reports were, as we're finding out now, they were not non-existent. They were just basically shunned or filed under the rug, if you will, and completely ignored by researchers in the past. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I'm guilty of that myself. It's not that the reports of abductions were so much ignored as the fact that when people reported odd and strange things happening to them, we just had no idea how to incorporate it into our system of thought. We had no way of understanding what was happening to people. So people were describing abduction events all the time to us, as we now know, and we just couldn't recognize it.
Now, have you, in your research, what's the farthest back that you have heard an abduction story go?
Well, you know, we're limited by the age of the people who come to see us. Since this is a phenomenon that begins in infancy and goes through old age, you know, if you were to get somebody who was 90, then you might have events 90 years ago. So the earliest event that I have, which is not really that early at all, is only about 1934, 1935.
So this has been going on at least that long.
Well, when we carefully trace this back, being as conservative as we can, which you have to be in this area, we think we can trace it back to around the turn of the century. I have a feeling that it really is, that it does go hand in hand with the mystery airship wave of 1896 and 1897. After that point, we don't get much of a sense of this phenomenon, or really of the UFO phenomenon at all. I think that it really does start en masse anyway in 1896, 1897, and that's when the abductions begin.
Okay. Now, you just said that you don't have a feel for the more historical or the more past events, but do you find that there's any kind of connection possibly to some of the work that, say, Jacques Vallée has done regarding, the folklore, if you will, that might in fact be real, literal stories?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that is vastly overstated. I think that just because that there are similarities here and there doesn't mean that there's any sort of real relationship, and certainly not that they can't necessarily be equated just because they might be similar. But of course, we have stories all the way through in every society of little people, of elves, of trolls, of dwarves, of whatever it is, who come and you know, who might steal babies and that sort of thing. But we also have stories of giants doing similar things as well, and just because there is a similarity doesn't necessarily mean that it's there. My guess is that if the abduction phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon, were continuing throughout for hundreds of years, we would know it. There would be significant quantities of evidence, not only in folklore, but all over the place, all through society as there is now, particularly in dream literature and short stories. It would be just sort of everywhere, and we'd see small beings with big gray black eyes appearing in art throughout the centuries, and none of the stuff that we would expect to see we do see, and so you got to be very, very careful with that business.
Okay, our lines are open, toll free, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Give us a call if you have an abduction story you'd like to tell Dr. Jacobs about, or you want to discuss any aspect of this, please give us a call. Again, our lines are open and it's toll free. David, now, your book was published in 92, Secret Life was published in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point, this was a 5-year research project that had over 60 participants. Now, can you describe the matrix that came out of your research, the matrix that you describe in the book?
Right. I have, in the back of the book, there's a sort of a diagram of a typical, common, average sort of garden variety abduction scenario. And although it looks fairly simple, it did, that little diagram took me about 3 years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically shows that there are what I call primary, secondary, and ancillary experiences, primary being experiences that happens to everyone in one form or another almost every time they are abducted. Secondary experiences happen once in a while and oftentimes quite a lot to many people, but not every time. And ancillary experiences are sort of miscellaneous experiences, supportive experiences, and experiences that don't happen very much very often, but they do happen often enough to be a common feature. And then we have reproductive, physical, and mental procedures that occur as well. And so what we get is, for example, in primary physical experiences, you get the standard examination, you get an implant, tissue sampling, things like that. For primary mental procedures, we get a series of staring procedures where beings will stare very closely into someone's eyes, visualizations, I call them, and we'll examine, we think, data from as if they're looking in a computer hard disk or something, looking at data in their minds, which might be memories or other data. For primary reproductive procedures, we get sperm and egg sampling and fetal implantations and fetal extractions. And these are, this is sort of a standard thing that happens to, I venture to say, to all abductees in most of the time.
Okay. All right, we're going to go to another break. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs, author of Secret Life, and we're talking about the anatomy of the abduction phenomena. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology, with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The BBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654.
Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet Newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009, it's toll-free number, our lines are open. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs, author of Secret Life, and we're talking about the anatomy of the abduction phenomenon. I can't get that right sometimes. David, I'd like to go into this matrix a little bit more in depth. For our listeners, what is, under the primary experiences, what is the typical abduction experience reported from start to finish? What starts and what starts it? What happens?
Okay. A person is usually alone, although not always. They might be with a husband or wife or with a small group of people. They suddenly feel that something is going on. They can't move. They're paralyzed. They might be sitting on the couch watching television. They might be asleep. They might be in their car. And the next thing you know, the small beings are in their room. They are scared to death, but they are paralyzed. They're lifted up out of where they are. They're floated up or walked across the room towards their window. They are floated then, and here comes a a rapid descent into the bar. They're floated into the bazaar, rather. They're floated directly through their closed window and up into a UFO that is hovering nearby. They're taken down a hallway. They're placed into taken into a large room. Oftentimes, their clothes are removed. They're placed on a table. There might be many other tables in the room with other people on them. They're then given a physical examination of an unusual type, not the kind that a doctor would give in his office. They then have a series of mental procedures administered to them, oftentimes leading to egg taking and sperm sampling. They might be led off after that to another room where they will have more mental procedures, where they'll see strange things, where they'll envision extraordinary scenes of atomic bombs going off or the earth being destroyed through pollution or whatever, all the while one of these things stares sideways, basically, into their eyes. And we think that these are all testing of emotional reactions to these particular scenes. They will then be led, for example, now, get a variety of different things, but they might be led into another room where they might see, from 25 to 50 babies lined up, and they'll be required to have some sort of physical interaction with those babies, to hold the baby. Sometimes women will be required not only to hold the baby, but to feed the baby, and the women oftentimes, to their amazement, will find that they are lactating. This is a lactation procedure that is done actually at the examination the examination phase. And the babies look strange, they look weird, they give the appearance of being sort of sickly, they look like they're wasting rather than thriving, they're thin, they're pale, they have very large eyes, but there are whites in the eyes. They have very small noses, but they do have noses, as opposed to the beings. They have a small little mouth, but there is a mouth, once again, as opposed to the beings, and same thing with the ears. And yet they don't look quite white, right, and many women are repelled by them, and yet they are required to hold them, and they do. Men and children will hold babies as well, or play with toddlers, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, and sometimes older. After this is done, and this might be, maybe 5 or 10 minutes worth, or maybe a little bit longer, they're then led out the hallway, they get their clothes back on, they go back into the entrance room, they're brought back to their normal place, their normal environment, and they're kind of switched back on, so to speak. They sit there and they're watching television again, and all they know is that the show that they were watching has been over with for an hour and a half, and they don't know what happened to their time, and they don't know what's going on, and they feel that something strange went on, but they just don't have a clue as to what it is.
Now, this is where this missing time phrase comes from, right?
Right. That might be a missing time sequence, but of course, all these abduction events are going to have missing time sequences unless a person is sleeping, and even then it's going to be missing time, but they're just not going to be aware that there is such a thing.
That's absolutely incredible. Now, going back to the bedroom at the beginning of the episode, what is significant about the light? A lot of abductees apparently report light coming into the room, and then a being appears. Is that the way it basically starts?
Yeah, that's quite common. But when you ask a question like that, what you're asking ultimately is a technological question.
Sure.
What we would expect to see in this phenomenon is very advanced technology, and of course that is what we do see.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to work out properties of light that are far more sophisticated than we have thought of yet.
I know the light seems to be very interesting, particularly in other reports and some of the subjects that we've covered on this program, dealing with, for example, the helicopter case, when they described the light as being almost, something that was solid.
Right.
Having solid properties, and it's quite interesting to me. Now, the other thing is, when these people are taken aboard and these procedures are performed on them, what comes out of that? For example, the babies. Are these babies somehow connected to the abductee, or are these just random children that are being presented to them?
Right. We're not exactly sure of that. We do know that sometimes the abductee feels that this baby is a product of their genetic makeup, that this baby has their sperm in it or their eggs in it, basically. Sometimes they don't feel that way, though. Sometimes it seems to be sort of a random baby, and they have to hold this baby, and they have to hold another one, and they have to hold another one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when they play with toddlers, oftentimes they get the feeling that one toddler might be theirs, but other toddlers aren't. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. However, I do feel that very often the abductee is shown the baby that did come from her, if it's a woman. For example, one woman says, well, this is my baby. Not only does it look like me, but it's got red hair like me. And there's other indications that this might indeed be the product of their genetics.
Now, is there any type of, in other words, these people obviously are traumatized or extremely frightened by this experience.
Right.
Are they told anything when they're, you know, when they're asking, what is this happening to me for? Are they told anything?
Yes, if they say something like that, why are you doing this to me? Now, you have to remember that this has already been done to the person many, 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 many times since they were an infant.
Mm-hmm.
But if that does come up, the answer is usually evasive, but it has to do primarily with you're doing something very important. This is very important for us and for you, or you're helping us, or something vague like that that doesn't give a whole lot of information but suggests that it's part of a larger plan, that there's a purpose here and that the purpose is good.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be good for us necessarily, but they obviously feel it is extremely good for them.
Okay. Now, what is, in your research, what has been, we're going to have to do this quick before we go to another break, but maybe we can think about this and we'll talk about this when we come back. What has been the selection process? Has anything been defined or has anything been narrowed down to indicate what, you know, what makes one person more susceptible than another?
Right. The key area here is the fact that if one or both of your parents was an abductee, then there's a real good possibility you are going to be an abductee.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about that a little bit more, and we'll get into the secondary and ancillary experiences of Dr. Jacob's Matrix when we come back from this break. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Give us a call. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs, author of Secret Life, and we're discussing the abduction phenomena. We'll be right back after this break.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Cassette tapes of previous shows are available for $8 each, or 2 for $12, or 4 for $20. You can also order Paranet memberships and subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter. Paranet, along with MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is pleased to offer a stunning black T-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, and the Paranet and MICAP logos, along with the beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to keep this program on the air. Call now to place an order or to get more information at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe, at 1-800-UFO-6381.
A lot of people think that to appreciate culture, you've got to enjoy things like this. Or this. In early Mesopotamia, evidence of the first audit exists in the form of lists on clay tablets. Well, a lot of people respond to those things like this. Fabulous. Other people go... Is it over? For those of you in the... category... You can't expect every cultural activity to appeal to everybody. That's why 23,000 arts and humanities groups called the National Cultural Alliance are offering you something everybody likes. A choice! For a free brochure about what's going on in your community, just call 800-NCA-8888. A little redundant? That's okay. And then you can get excited about something like this. Oh, yeah. William Tellytalk. The arts and humanities. There's something in it for you. The National Cultural Alliance and the Ad Council invite you to explore what's available in your community. Just call 800-NCA-888.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Have you been abducted? If you think you have or would like to talk to our guest, Dr. David Jacobs, give us a call at 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. Again, my guest is Dr. David Jacobs. He's the publisher, or author, I'm sorry, of a book called Secret Life. And David is a researcher into the abduction phenomenon. We've been talking about the anatomy of abductions. David, on this scenario, what is the proof? What convinces someone like you, with the background you have, that this is really going on? Is there any type of evidence that?
It's much like the UFO phenomenon in general. What you have ultimately is accounts. What you have is anecdotal information, and if you have 1, 2, or 10, or 20, or 30, it doesn't mean a whole lot. As with UFOs, what you have is a preponderance of evidence. Eventually, you have thousands of people saying the same thing, and they are presenting supporting evidence in the form of photographs or marks on the ground and that sort of thing. And the same thing with abductions. I mean, you have thousands of people coming forward saying exactly the same thing. People who have no reason to lie and who are not lying.
Mm-hmm.
And presenting scars and missing time sequences and other forms of evidence, you know, in support of their accounts. And eventually, it's like a glacier, you know, it's slow moving, but it's overwhelming and takes over, and you're just forced into it. You have to go where the evidence leads you, even though you may not want to go there, even though you might find it to be ridiculous and crazy. As a historian and as an academic, you've got to go where the evidence leads you, period. And you've just got to be true to yourself and true to the phenomenon, and that's what we've done with UFOs, and that's what we're doing with abductions.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. The problem is that the stories are overwhelming, but there are physical traces. There are things that indicate that the phenomena is real, and I'm amazed that actually the flood of credible reports that are starting to come out. You know, for example, the Buff Ledge incident back in 68 that Walter Webb investigated for the Center for UFO Studies.
Mm-hmm.
That case is so interesting, and it has so many parallels to even the Betty and Barney Hill story of 61. We're going to take a call. We've got Ron from Monterey, California, on our affiliate KNRY. Good evening, Ron.
Yeah, hi. Dr. Jacobs, I have a question. You mentioned before about repeat abduction sites where people are abducted over and over again throughout their life. Has you or anyone that you know in the field developed a surveillance technique to try and capture an abduction on video?
Very good question.
Get some hard evidence?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Ron.
Okay, Mike, you're going to have to repeat that. I was not able to hear.
Okay, he wanted to know if there has been any kind of surveillance techniques that have been perfected, over the time to track this kind of stuff and find out what's going on.
Yes, we have attempted that. I've set up video cameras in people's homes, pointed on their bedroom or wherever else they want to point it. I've done this with about a dozen people, maybe a little bit more. And some people have slept underneath a camera for as long as a year and sometimes 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what we find is that when an abduction event starts, they are made to get up and turn off the camera or the VCR, or there'll be a power outage in their area, or they will simply, quote, forget, end quote, to turn it on the night before. Or they will decide that they don't want to sleep in the bedroom that night. They want to sleep on the couch in the living room. And so we have come extremely close, I must say, to capturing things on tape, but we have not been able to do that. So far, we don't have any abduction sequences that we know of where a person says that they were abducted and a tape has shown that
mm-hmm.
they were not.
Now, what about implants? There's been rumors. Now, I don't know how much of it is fact or not, but let's ask an expert here. What has been recovered in the field or in the area of implants?
Well, I'm not a real expert in that area, I must say. There have been numbers, a number of purported implants that have been analyzed. So David Pritchard at MIT has analyzed one from Richard Price, which I'm not sure if it's from Richard Price, but one that apparently is not extraterrestrial in origin, at least doesn't appear to be. And there's another one that was sort of in someone's throat that was analyzed that is ambiguous. It's hard to tell what it was. The problem with implants is that no matter how interesting they are, no matter how complicated they are, they are never going to prove or disprove the existence of the abduction phenomenon, because all of the implants most likely are going to be made of in some way materials that are obtainable on Earth, no matter how rare.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the elements in the universe are made up essentially of the same things.
But wouldn't something of that compact of a technology, would that not stand to show that there was something or is something very unusual going on?
We don't have anything of extreme technology yet, but even then, you can never absolutely positively rule out a hoax, and it's only
sure.
going to be as good as the story is, as the account is. It can only be used as supporting evidence. Unless it says, stamped right on it, made on Mars, it's not going to prove that it's an alien, as
sure.
far as we can tell.
Okay. All right, we've got another call. We're going to take Pat from Salinas, California, on our affiliate in Monterey, KNRY. Go ahead, Pat. What's your question for our guest, Dr. David Jacobs?
Yes, Dr. Jacobs, I'm wondering about the locality of the abductions. Do they seem to take more place out in the country so they could be on scene when landing or abducting, or what about versus the city in neighborhoods, just regular common neighborhoods?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good question. We used to think that location was extremely important in UFO sightings, and UFO researchers over the years had big maps with pushpins showing the various locations of sightings, and there were theories worked out about where sightings were. There was the Bavik line by Amy Michelle, you know, orthophony. Mm-hmm. There was a whole area of UFO research based on location. David Saunders did work on location to try to predict waves and so forth. Now we are fairly well convinced that location is the least meaningful of all of the UFO phenomena aspects and facts. Abductions take place absolutely anywhere and everywhere. It does not matter. The only thing that determines where an abduction is going to take place is where the abductee is. That's the bottom line.
And that doesn't matter where they are.
I've had people abducted out of the Hilton Hotel in the middle of London, in the middle of New York City, in the middle of nowhere, and everywhere in between. It
now,
makes no difference.
And, of course, this happens, too, with witnesses. I mean, people around these people.
When we have a number of cases, of course, where people who are abducted and seen by others who are themselves abducted, and the cases are independently investigated, and each person confirms the other one's abduction without the other person knowing that the other one was talking about them. We have a few cases, not a whole lot, but a few cases where people see other people being abducted and are not abducted themselves and are not part of the abduction phenomenon. And then we have an enormous amount of cases where people are switched off.
Okay.
And see others being abducted.
Okay, we're going to go to our break, 1-800-836-2009. My guest is Dr. David Jacobs. We're talking about the abduction phenomena. He is the author of Secret Life. We're going to come back and wrap up the program and get some ideas on where to go with this. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet Newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-7000.
6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at area 303-669-1800.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And we're on the final stretch of the program for the night. And David, let's talk a little bit real quick to wrap up the hour. Let's talk about where the research is going. I know that there are a lot of things that are going on. Do you have any kind of a foundation, or are you working through a foundation that deals with this?
No, I'm not, unfortunately. I'm just working here in my office alone. we are not supported, and most of the funds that I use right now have come out of my pocket, although, of course, there is the... There are a few supporting organizations now,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have any organization around me. However, I'm beginning work on my next book, and I will be concentrating on the hybrids. I will be concentrating on what happens to these babies when they grow up.
Okay.
And the world of hybrids and hybrid life and that sort of thing. It's sort of a new direction. I'm pushing the envelope a little bit. Just trying to take the whole phenomenon into different areas that I think are extremely important and very sort of extraordinary, and trying to flesh it out even more than before and get a much more rounded picture of exactly what's going on here and what's happening to us, of course.
Now, what do you think it is? I mean, what is your, you know, after the years that you've been working at this, what kind of conclusions or theories or theses have you drawn from this?
Well, I do believe that this is something that is strictly an alien agenda that is not positive for us, that this is not something that we're going to rejoice about. I am extremely pessimistic over what I see, and I have no occasion to go back on it. I know there's a group of people who are quite optimistic, think this is just wonderful, and they're helping us, and they're benevolent and all that, and I find no evidence for that whatsoever. I find it irresponsible, actually, to be involved with that. And so I feel that this is strictly an alien agenda that uses people, and I feel that we are in the process of being victimized, and what I see, I don't like.
Yeah, I agree. What can you give, what kind of advice can you give to our listeners, anybody out there that has been perhaps had this experience? What kind of advice could you give them for dealing with this?
My advice, and this is underlined with capital letters and boldface, is be careful. There's an awful lot of people out there who do hypnosis, and there's very few of them who know what they're doing. This is a very specialized, very delicate situation to be involved with, and opening up the memories of this thing can be a very, very difficult thing to deal with, and I would just be extremely careful and make sure that the person who you're going to knows exactly what he or she is doing. This is an area fraught with danger.
When you say danger, you're talking about both in the psychological arena,
right,
as well as just the kind of thing that comes out of this?
Yes, I feel that looking at these experiences is difficult to do for the abductee, and unless you have somebody who's asking the questions and who's doing the therapy and doing the research, who knows what they're doing, the potential for abuse is there, and we've had this, and hypnosis is the easiest damn thing to do in the world. Anybody can do hypnosis. It's asking the right questions in the right way at the right time and saying the right thing when problems come up. That takes lots of training. And my colleague Bud Hopkins and I have gone around the country trying to train people, along with John Carpenter, on how to do hypnosis and how to do therapy. And believe me, even in the therapeutic community, it's not easy to do.
Okay.
It's a tough one.
Afraid that's going to have to be the last word, David. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
The information was very interesting, and we'll have you back and talk about the second book that you're going to be putting out, okay?
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Okay. Next week is Christmas, and we are going to be doing a show. So we will see you next week. And until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.